Now, it's time for a little R&R.
Ball into the bucket, lays it up and in.
Ball game, Rizzo!
Live in the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, this is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
This team is going to be tough when they finally get it together.
Sit back and relax. Let Russo and Rizzo take you home.
Oh, mercy!
You had a great college football weekend ahead. You got Missouri, Alabama, Indiana, Oregon. A whole lot to look forward to, a whole lot to bet on. And it all gets me jazzed up for what bowl season has on the horizon. The 2025 Boca Raton Bowl, it's going to be kicking off its 12th year. It's going to be Tuesday, December 23rd at 2 p.m. at Flagler Credit Union Stadium. Its game is going to air on ESPN. It's going to have two of the biggest and best teams from the group of five that are going to battle it out for their chance at the title. More information can be found at BocaRatonBowl.com. Follow along on Twitter at Boca Bowl and Facebook.com/Boca Bowl as we inch closer to bowl season and to the 2025 Boca Raton Bowl, Tuesday, December 23rd at FAU Stadium. Colin Russo, Mike Rizzo, Damian Perez. Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3. Let's bounce around a little bit. Let's have some fun. Let's do a little 5 and 5 presented by Flagler Credit Union.
Five topics.
High five.
5 o'clock.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Let's get out of here.
Endless takes.
You can't handle the truth.
All gas, no brakes.
And it's shaking, baked ten.
It's time for the 5 at 5.
Hold on to your butts.
Presented by Flagler Credit Union, proud supporter of FAU Athletics. Number one.
Nightmare. Sports night. For the Philadelphia Philly and Eagle fan, just the Philly fan in general. We'll sum it up that easy. We're going to start on the NFL. Eagles losing to the Giants 34-17. Colin, we talked a lot about Dable and the Giants in hour number one. So I'm gonna keep things locked in here at story number one, 5 at 5, with the Philadelphia Eagles. They're going to be able to bounce back from this two-game losing streak, Broncos and Giants.
We put them at number two in our top 10 rankings. I mean, one time can be a fluke. Two times can represent a pattern. They need to figure out how much they want to identify themselves offensively with running the football. They have to utilize... They have to be a run-first football team again. You can't get... They moved away from the run. That was the first time in my life, I think, I've ever seen the Eagles move away from the run game. That was the first time I've seen that. And they danced away from it. He wasn't going north and south. They couldn't get anything going because of that. If you want to throw the ball all over the field to A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, go be my guest. But there have been two straight games now where he's thrown it 30-plus times, and they have accounted to absolutely nothing offensively. And one of those touchdowns they scored where they ran four straight tush pushes in order to get it, which was a joke, by the way.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
A joke. Oh, my God. Does that make football look ugly?
That was tough to watch.
Can't say, just stop it. You can't run it four times in a row. You don't run anything four times in a row. That's a waste of time. Waste of time. But I think they'll bounce back. They got too much talent in order not to. And to this point, they put themselves in the position. They already have 4 wins. So they don't need to. They're not breaking any records. They don't need to win 15 games. They need to win 13 games.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Sadly, because I can't stand Philly fan. Sadly, they're going to be fine. Jalen Hurts is going to be fine. I think something, though, the chink in the armor is neutralizing the run with them and making Hurts throw and making Hurts make tough decisions.
100%.
Now, the Devontae Smith downfield throw is unacceptable. The downfield throw where he completely missed him. The true moment where they lost the game was the interception down 27-17. But I think the momentum completely turned on its head on a 3rd and 6 where Devontae Smith would have had a walk in the end zone touchdown with his speed.
Yeah, Hurts had a bad
game. And his breakaway speed. So, I think the chink in the armor is that. The Eagles got to find a way to get Saquon Barkley back on track. And if they can't, Hurts has to be a little better. But to be honest, even trolling aside for the Philly fan from me, I think they're just fine. But the chink in the armor is there.
Number two.
All right, sticking in Philadelphia, we just recently talked about the Phillies losing to the Dodgers. Dodgers advancing to the NLCS. Talked a lot about Phillies. So on the flip side of things here, kind of going away from number one and focusing on the Philly team, we're going to focus on the Dodgers here. Kyle, are the Dodgers still that team, which I said yesterday, that's a cut above everybody else that's left in the MLB playoffs?
They just went 5-for-29 with runners in scoring position throughout. They stranded 31 batters. and they won in four games. And they won pretty convincingly outside of that. And they and their ace, Yamamoto, didn't even pitch well. And they still won in four games. Yeah, I that's part of the reason I'm rooting for the Brewers is, weirdly enough, I think the Brewers would give the Dodgers a better fight. I think the Dodgers would rip apart that Cubs pitching staff. And I don't know if they do it just as much to the Brewers. So I would root. I'm rooting for the best series possible. And that's part of the reason why I want the Brewers to win. And I think they will win. But the Dodgers might rip apart everybody.
You want to know why? One of the big reasons, watching that game last night, one of the big things that stuck out to me. The Roki Sasaki. How about that? That kid comes in and just is an absolute weapon now.
Three perfect innings yesterday.
He couldn't. You couldn't even pitch that young man early on in the season. That's why the Dodgers are great. That's why the Dodgers.
Their biggest problem was bullpen, and here he comes.
They have the luxury of, all right, Roki stinks as a starter. Well, we're going to find a place for him because we're just that deep everywhere else. You know, Kershaw could eat some innings. Is it going to be ugly? Sure. But, you know, Roki's not a starter. Let's have Kershaw eat some innings. Oh, we're injured. We'll still figure it out. And then Sasaki coming in there and just doing, like you said, the three scoreless. Unbelievable. They have talent everywhere. Someone will get hurt, and they got someone on the bench that is damn near better. That's why the Dodgers are better than everybody. We talk a lot about the money side of baseball and stuff. This is why it's a small market team. Kyle and I rooting for, you know.
It drives you crazy.
It does, because money, and it's the same thing with college football, in my opinion, with the NIL and whatever.
But money, you're on the other side of it.
I am, thankfully. God, Kyle, I got to be good at something.
Yeah, it's good with Ohio State.
Kyle, I got to be good at something. You know the teams I root for? I got to be good at something. Thank God for the Buckeyes. But quickly, money gets you in the conversation. It doesn't guarantee you anything. But with how the Dodgers have been able to do business the last couple of years, number one, being good in their own farm system, and then trading said farm system guys for proven commodities like Mookie Betts and company and Freddie Freeman was the signing, but you get the point. Have guys come up, be unbelievable, have that pipeline in Japan, and then be able to sign whoever the hell you want and trade for whoever the hell you want. They're in a fantastic spot. I don't see things changing. By the way, I want the Cubs because the Cubbies have that blast of power in their lineup where one swing of the bat can change things. I know Chirio is kind of that player from Milwaukee.
I mean, yeah, Milwaukee has got that. They got more of the blue. You want a team like the Blue Jays to play them, or you want a team that's a little bit more streaky offensively?
I just feel like it. I don't feel like it's going to be much of a series if they face off against the Brewers. That's my two cents. I think the Cubbies with their lineup could go toe-to-toe with scoring runs with the Dodgers.
The Dodgers are at their best. Rip apart that pitching staff. Rip them apart. That's the thing I get nervous about. I value the pitching there, and the Brewers have better pitching. You're talking about the lineup. I talk about the pitching. I'm on the other side of it. I see your point. Cubs probably have a better lineup in terms of star power. Can you trust them in a big environment? But I think the Brewers do have better pitchers, so we'll see. I mean, but you know what? We're probably just dancing around the same fact that the Dodgers are probably going to win in five.
Correct.
Against regardless
whoever
of who
they play.
Right.
So,
number three.
Haven't talked about the baseball game coming up tonight. You got the Mariners and the Tigers in a do or die fifth game on the mound tonight. Tarik Skubal. Who else would it be? The unstoppable best pitcher in the MLB. Throwing 101 on the black on the hands, Tarik Skubal against our guy and hopefully soon to be friend of show, George Kirby.
One of these days.
Who do you got tonight?
Mariners. I am Jorge Polanco. Let's get about three homers from you again. We saw it on Sunday against Skubal. I think this is going to be a little bit closer of a battle of the bullpens quicker than people anticipate. I think this will be another one of those games, 3-2. You know, 4-3, something like that. But I think the Mariners will edge them out. I do. I think that home field will make a difference. I think I trust their offense a little bit more. But you got to give the Tigers a lot of credit with how they've won, especially in Detroit. But all this tells you is that home field makes a big difference.
So I'm going Detroit because of the pitching. Skubal's pitched in seven plus both times that he has pitched in the postseason. Obviously, against the Guardians, the guy was the best pitcher maybe I've ever seen in my life. And then the loss that he suffered against Seattle, 7 innings pitched, 9 strikeouts, and the 2 earned runs were 2 home runs. Seattle does have that. That's the one thing I do worry about for the Tigers tonight. Seattle does have that pop to where they could hit home runs and they could score runs that way. Skubal is one of those odd ball pitchers where usually when you see a pitcher 2 times in a row call in a series, it's advantage hitters. I think it's the opposite with this guy. He has pitched 5 times against my team this year. Granted, the Indians aren't, excuse me, the Guardians aren't world beaters at the plate like Seattle. But I think Skubal is one of those odd pitchers where advantage pitcher when you see a team 2 times around. I'm going Tigers because I think Skubal is going to be unstoppable.
Number four.
All right, let's go. Let's focus a little bit on the college side. Got a couple of big matchups on the college football side of things. You got Alabama and Missouri at noon. You got my Buckeyes going up against Illinois. You got Indiana and Oregon. You got the Red River Rivalry. Let me try that. Red River Rivalry. You got the Red River Rivalry.
Without a quarterback on Oklahoma's side and then Texas who stinks on the other side?
Still going with the non-John Mateer Sooners probably over Texas, as crazy as that sounds. But that's 3:30. Let's get to your nightcaps. You got Florida at Texas A&M, Georgia at Auburn, Michigan at USC. Kyle, I know you're a bit of a USC believer this year, even though they stubbed their foot against the Illini. Kyle, out of the games I mentioned, which games you're looking forward to the most on the college football
slate? I think USC
slate?
Is going
to
win. Rich Eisen joined us a couple weeks ago and he said he's nervous about that game. I think he's right to be. I think USC is a little underrated. They're coming off a bye. They're going to be at home. Michigan is a little unproven. I think the fact that them suffering their second loss, I think USC needs a big win. And I think they're going to actually have that. I think they'll beat Michigan this weekend. So that's number one. As for the other games on the schedule, you know Missouri doesn't play a road game until the 8 games into the season. And this is included in part of that home stretch. Now they could run the football all over the place. Can Alabama stop that? Alabama just had 2 big wins in the row. Can they really string together 3? Or can Eli Drinkwitz, the head coach of Missouri, finally have a huge win? He has not had one since he has been there. That would be the type of big-time, put-it-on-the-plaque victory that Missouri is desperately looking for.
Well, speaking of that Missouri team, one thing friend of show and Kaiser University AD Chris Swagger mentioned about that team, they're returning a lot. They returned a lot on defense. They returned a lot on offense. They added in the portal.
Right.
Bo Pabula, former Penn State quarterback, doing great things there this year. You want to know my mortal lock of the weekend? I got 2. Alabama in that game.
You're big on Alabama.
And Ohio State on the road, 14.5 against Illinois.
You're big on Alabama.
I am. I think they're due to have a bad game.
They're
the best team in the SEC.
They're due to have a bad game. I'd be nervous about that. Due to have a bad game.
I think Ohio State on the road against Illinois quickly. I think that it's going to be a game in the first half similar to that Washington game. I do think Day will open up the playbook early on with saying leads the NCAA in completion percentage. I got the Buckeyes big in the second half. Those are my 2 games. I'm watching Alabama and Missouri, and then I finally get to watch the Buckeyes with my own 2 eyes live coming up at noon. It's the big noon game on Fox. So.
That's the big noon game?
Wow.
You're going to watch the big noon show?
No. I'm going to watch game day and then flip it on over to Fox. But when are you going to give the Buckeyes credit? If they win at Illinois convincingly.
Illinois, the same team that lost to Indiana by
53
points?
It's just funny because, like...
What's funny?
Not necessarily from you. Maybe from you a bit.
Probably.
Like, Texas, oh, the Buckeyes are going to lose. Oh, Texas stinks. Washington, oh, the Buckeyes might be in some trouble. Quickly blow the doors off of Washington. Oh, Washington stinks. It's going to be the same thing with Illinois.
Texas actually does stink.
It's going to be the same thing with Illinois. The Buckeyes are probably going to win by 10 or 12, maybe not even cover the spread that I'm saying is a mortal lock. But, like, they're going to look good on the road, and everyone's just going, oh, Illinois stinks. Like, when will the Buckeyes get some flowers for having the best defense in the country and one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the country?
When they beat Michigan.
So I guess the Penn State game might not mean much now, which stinks.
But they got so Penn State.
Penn State at home, November 1st.
Yeah.
Remember we were going
Penn
through the
Penn State
schedule.
Stinks. Michigan. Beat Michigan. Then we'll talk. You want to shut down Drew Aller? A lot of people could shut down Drew Aller.
We also are going to have the Ohio State game on ESPN 106.3, according to our director of ops, Dave Judo. So... make sure you're listening to the game on ESPN 106.3. We have the game on the radio.
Mike, the jury's still out on if Ohio State stinks or not.
No, it's not.
Nobody knows. They might stink.
They do not stink. I can promise you that.
They might stink. Mike was convinced they stunk, and then he saw them against Washington on the road, and now they're great.
Well, everyone said Washington had the best quarterback, wide receiver, and running back tandem in the country. That was the conversation. But, like, that's what I'm frustrated about.
It looked like it.
That's what I'm. Didn't look like it because he had the best defense in the country.
Oh,
and Avro Reese is going to win the Butkus.
He's a good player.
The best linebacker.
That I agree with.
All right, so like I don't know.
I think the team's a little overrated.
Looking forward to the playoff.
Team stinks.
I'm looking forward to the college football playoff.
All right.
The
all
Big
right.
Ten championship.
Big Ten stinks. That's the pill you can't swallow.
No, they don't. Oregon and
Ohio State might be great. The Big Ten stinks.
Oregon and Ohio State are good
Nick
teams.
Nick Saban said that today. He said the Big Ten is not that deep. He's right.
Oregon and Ohio State are good teams. And God forbid Michigan. All right.
Should hope that Illinois plays well this weekend.
No.
Because if they roll over and get killed by 42 points, it makes the Big Ten look worse.
Win by 50. I think Indiana might be decent quickly.
Oh, now you're on Indiana because you know the Big Ten needs the firepower.
If Michigan loses,
you need the Big Ten to get the firepower.
If Michigan loses to USC, I need you to hold them accountable like you hold my Buckeyes accountable.
Michigan?
Yeah, there'll be two losses on the season already.
Oh, I agree. I don't hold Michigan to the same standard that I hold Ohio State.
Okay, well, Michigan fans act like they're Ohio State. So I need you. Can you say that in a microphone one more time?
I don't hold Michigan to the same standard I hold Ohio State.
I'm good.
Still might be overrated. That's Mike Rizzo, Colin Russo, Damian Perez. We'll loop in the Hall of Fame reliever, San Diego Padre legend, played for Milwaukee a little bit. Former Arizona Wildcat Trevor Hoffman joins us, and we'll talk about the game last night against the Phillies, talk about his career a whole lot. Second all-time in the MLB history of saves, 601 over his career. Made one World Series run in 1998 with the San Diego Padres, lost to the Yankees, one of the great Yankee teams of all time in four games. We'll talk to him next. Trevor Hoffman joining the program on Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Colin Russo rolling on here on ESPN 106.3 from the City Place Studios. We've got a special guest now in honor of the perfect game being up here in South Florida for the WWBA World Championship event. One of the special advisors with Perfect Game and MLB Hall of Famer, one of the great relievers in the history, one of the great pitchers in the history of baseball, joins us now. Trevor Hoffman on the program. Mr. Hoffman, welcome in. How are we doing today?
Doing good, Colin. Good to be with you, man. Thanks for having me.
Second all-time in the Major League Baseball in the history for saves. And Trevor, tell me a little bit. You're here in South Florida. You're around the game, perfect game. Basically 120 schools, 300 scout schools. Everybody's going around up in Jupiter. Tell me a little bit about the event and the amount of talent that you're seeing here at this amazing perfect game event.
Yeah, I don't think there's a golf cart left in the state that isn't in Jupiter right now, to be honest with you, because it's a mad herd of people that go from field to field to kind of take a look at certain matchups that are happening, certain teams that they're looking at. But you're right, like 120 different schools represented. Professional ranks are there. I know the Padres have a big group assembled, and I got to see them firsthand yesterday. So it's a great opportunity to put some eyeballs on some good kids and some good baseball being had. And they're just trying to dodge some raindrops to try and get some games in.
Welcome to South Florida, right? Nothing screams Florida like it raining every single day. Believe me, I know, Trevor. It is a nightmare to deal with, especially in the afternoons. But, I mean, looking at how baseball is now in the recruiting sense and working your way up and going to events like this is obviously exploded. It's always been a thing, but it's exploded, I would say, in the last 10, 15, 20 years with the amount of eyeballs that's online and that you also have to be at it in person. Comparatively to when you were coming up and when you were going to Arizona and having your come up, how does it change in terms of how these players are playing, how they're getting seen, and the type of events that they're doing going through it?
Yeah, it's become really interesting in how kids can really promote themselves and get out there in a way that is different than the era I came up in. It was just happenstance. If a guy was at a game and you happen to have a good game, you might get written down on a piece of paper and they'll follow you a little bit. Kids today, they can reach out to the recruiting coordinators and let them know what their schedule's like, what game they'll be playing, where they're going to be at, what time. And, you know, that way it's not just a hope that they randomly at your field and run by when you're playing. And so, it's a good opportunity. They can pick out some of the schools that they would hope to play for one day and hopefully get those eyeballs there. And honestly, it's a great opportunity for the teammates to be seen too. And so This event in South Florida is fantastic for, you know, the rising kids in 26 and 27 classes that they're going to graduate from. And, you know, to be able to be in front of a lot of scouts, and a lot of coaches, really is the next step out of high school for these kids.
Now, Trevor, coming up in your way, of drafted in 1989 by the Reds, again selected in the expansion draft over to the Florida Marlins. You had a great career with San Diego, as we know, and also the Milwaukee Brewers. You played 18 years in the majors. You played in the bigs. You had a terrific career. You were able to stay on top of it, and you were able to kind of have a consistent career. Comparatively, looking back on it, tell me a little bit about what it took to have a 20-year career, damn near 20-year career in the Major League Baseball. It's not necessarily something that we see too much nowadays, and comparatively to what you're seeing, how'd you do it?
Yeah, you know, there's not a magic wand to just say, hey, this is what it's going to take. But along the way, I had really good people around me. I was very fortunate that the training staff that I was associated with, whether it was in the minor leagues in Cincinnati or Florida, as you mentioned, San Diego and Milwaukee, the bulk of it being in San Diego, Todd Hutchinson and I worked really well together. And, it, you know, it wasn't magic. It wasn't rocket science. It was get out there and do your running to kind of help the system move around. It was the weights. It was the manual stuff that we would do in the training room. And, you know, it's just paying attention. I think I was lucky in a sense that I wasn't throwing the numbers that you're seeing today on television. And so, you know, there wasn't the stress on my joints per se that some other people had. I had to kind of trick them with a mediocre fastball and a decent changeup and kind of get in and out of there. So I was pretty lucky. Again, having the right people around kind of really extended my career.
A little modest with the decent changeup. But, Trevor, one thing about your career that's interesting is you're right. You mentioned it. You didn't necessarily need to throw, the heat and the power, the firepower that you see nowadays. I was talking to a couple former professional players yesterday at the Perfect Game event, and they said a lot of the same thing. These days, a lot of it is just about being a flamethrower, throwing harder than the next guy. And you're seeing, obviously, the increase in protective arm injuries and innings restrictions and keeping these guys healthy and understanding mileage. That's sort of where pitching is going. Did you almost see that coming? Or is this something that has been a new phenomenon that has sort of taken you by surprise, that it's less, a little bit less about the chess with pitching and it's more just about the power? Tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting dynamic in a sense that, you know, we've always been chasing velocity. I think, you know, as a kid growing up, I was enamored watching Nolan Ryan throw fastballs by people. And so it's like, man, I want to be like that. And how do I go about doing that? And so today we see so much velocity in the game. And it is a little bit different in a sense that the radar gun is picking up the ball up at the release point of the hand versus at the plate, where back in the day it was, you know, 100 miles an hour from Nolan was at the plate. So, you know, God knows how hard he would have been throwing it. They've been picking it up out of the hand. But you're right. There's a lot of people in the game that are throwing hard, and there's going to be an adjustment where, hey, I don't have to throw 100 every pitch. I need, you know, sooner or later, just that becomes normal if you see it all the time, and you got to learn to back it off and change speeds. And I just, we're very concerned about the ripping of, you know, elbows with the spin that they're trying to create on shaping different pitches. And so, you know, it's important that they take a serious look at their own career and go, hey, there's a limit of anybody's, you know, bullets that they're going to have in their arm. And so you got to be paying attention. The parents have to be involved. And, hey, you know, I'm not going to go to 14 different tournaments throughout the summer. I'm going to pick a couple. I'm going to make sure I'm up for it. And, you know, hopefully I'll play other sports throughout the calendar year that can augment some of the things I would only do in baseball. And so it's something that you got to be proactive with your own career. It's amazing how hard people are throwing now. But across the board, but you still got to put it through the strike zone. So command's probably the biggest component that we don't talk about enough.
Major League Baseball Hall of Famer Trevor Hoffman with us now on ESPN 106.3. Trevor, let's get into your career a little bit. San Diego, for the bulk of your career, you played for Bruce Bochy was your manager at the beginning of his career. Tell me about him a little bit, because he's probably going to get a job post-Texas, a four-time World Series champion. You guys had a couple good runs, including the 98 team, which we'll get into. Tell me a little bit about playing for Bochy. Did you almost get the sense that this guy was going to be an all-time great manager? Like the brighter pastures were ahead with him. Did you have a sense that I'm in the midst of a really, really going to be a successful, great Major League manager?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting that, you know, the scuttlebutt around the league about certain people were players' managers. And, you know, the guys in Atlanta would talk about Bobby Cox. The guys in New York would talk about Joe Torre. And, Boats was that way for me in particular. He just had the great ability to communicate. You trusted what he would say to you is, you know, what he's going to do. And that's all you can ask for is trust between you and your manager. And, it, you know, as far as him moving on and having the success that he did in San Francisco, there was no doubt that he was beyond his years. You know, we talk about a lot of analytics in the game. He goes, you know, I was prepared equally as much as everybody else. I just had, you know, up in my head. I didn't have to have, you know, an enormous amount of information. I was kind of paying attention, you know, to the things that I was given and things that I was seeing with my own two eyes that he would say. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting if he does walk away from the game. He had an amazing career. He'll be in Cooperstown before you know it. And, it doesn't surprise me. But, you know, getting to be around a guy like that and see how he works everybody and, you know, being a journeyman to his degree as a player, he recognized that not every roster is built with superstars and is more of the same type of players that he was. He could relate, and he did an amazing job. It was a privilege to play for him.
And a lot of things that goes unsung about the managers of today's game, even back then, was feel. And you mentioned analytics. Some guys were ahead of their time in terms of how to read analytics, how to leverage it, especially in the bullpen. But nowadays, more so than ever, you're seeing managers really analyze and get into the numbers of which pitchers to go when. And I wanted to ask you about your perspective as it, because as a closer, as a reliever, there's different understandings of when you should go in and if you need to get four outs, or comparatively, if you're going to get six. The Phillies asked Duran to get four yesterday. They brought him in the seventh. I mean, there is a lot of overanalyzing that can happen when you have this much numbers in front of you, especially nowadays. Tell me a little bit about how the approach to deploying bullpen arms was when you played versus what you're seeing now.
Yeah, I think in my day, it was pretty designated on what guys' roles were. And, you know, it was comfortable because you had an idea how you could, each of us could prepare from the sixth inning on, you know, how we were going to prepare and how we were going to roll through the rest of the game based off of the usage that we'd all gotten used to. And that's a comforting feeling to know, you know, when you're going to be used and how you can prepare for that. You know, today, you know, shoot, San Diego's bullpen had almost an abundant amount of talent, you know, bringing Mason Millen over and unfortunately losing Jason Adam, but you had Robert Suarez, you had Adrian Morihone, you had Jeremy Estrada, you had guys that, you know, were high leverage guys, and Mike Shield did an amazing job of deploying these weapons when he felt like he had the matchup that he needed to have and trying to preserve a win or chase a win or even like how he's going to navigate being down. So, you know, the analytics do play a factor. I know that, you know, they don't want to see guys as much facing a lineup three times. But like you said, Colin, like, trust your eyes. If he's having no stress innings and he pitch counts down and they're just not seeing them, you're actually maybe doing them a favor by bringing in another bullpen arm just to kind of stay away from certain things that are triggers that you think analytics are telling you. And so I agree with you. I think, you know, trusting what your eyes are really telling you is probably the biggest thing that managers today have to fight with.
And, Trevor, one thing about the Padres you were with, that 98 team made the World Series run. You ran into one of the great Yankee teams of all time on top of that. But you guys had a terrific run and a lot of high-leverage situations that you were involved with. Tell me a little bit about, as a closer, you had so much success, 600 saves. It's a little different when you get into the postseason. It's a different feel when you get into the postseason. And the stakes are higher. I think everybody can see that some pitchers feel it. Tell me a little bit about the approach going into a postseason game. Did you, as a player, try to keep it as normal as possible? Or did that sort of high leverage bring something out of you? You throw it a little tick harder. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think the neat thing about it is that you try and develop routines. And regardless if it's an April game or, you know, just after the break or postseason, you try and keep your routines. But there's no way of looking around, you know, postseason baseball. Like, every momentum changes from pitch to pitch, not inning to inning. And so I would have liked to have had a little more success. As you mentioned, a pretty darn good Yankee team we ran into.
Yeah.
Their patience at the plate was unbelievable, and they ended up getting us in four straight. And what an amazing team. It was an honor to kind of go up against them. I wish I had played a little better myself, but, you know, those things happen. And as I look back even today, this long ago, it was such an awesome opportunity to be in the World Series, to go compete with the guys that were around me. Just a lot of fun time. And I really enjoy watching postseason baseball now. I can't get enough of it. I wish we had more of them. You know, I'd like to see the expansion of playoff games and going up against the NFL, because, you know, we're down to one game in the division series today and another one tomorrow. And It just starts the climb up the ladder to try and hoist the trophy. It's a good time to be watching baseball.
So, Trevor, are you in favor of the three-game wild card, five-game divisional series? Do you think it should expand, go seven and then seven again, and then maybe five? Why, do you think more teams should be in? What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I think seven. I look back, I go, you know what? I think hockey and basketball have it where their teams are going to rise after seven games. You're going to get a really good handle of who should beat who. I think it's silly to play 162 games and have it decided in three. It just, and then you got people waiting around for longer times than they do over the All-Star break. So, you know, everyone, you add two more teams, you could get everyone started on time at the same time. You play seven games in, you know, the first series, second series, and obviously into the World Series. I don't think you can get enough playoff games. You might have to shorten the season a little bit to do that, but the big problem would be how do I manage a roster? You know, I have to have a roster that, one, you know, can combat and can compete for 162, and then also a sprint. I think it's almost too much of a sprint in three games. You know, you can run into two hot pitchers, one hot pitcher for that matter, and shut down a good lineup. And we all know good pitching shuts down good hitting most of the time, and you don't need as many. But in a seven-game series, you're going to have a true test of your full roster.
Trevor Hoffman, MLB Hall of Famer, second all-time in Major League Baseball saves, joining us now, 601 to be exact, on ESPN 106.3. Trevor, one thing I wanted to ask you about, you're on top of the postseason baseball. Last night's game, the Philadelphia Phillies and the Dodgers were in a pitching duel. You want to talk about great pitching, locking down great hitting. You saw it last night at Dodger Stadium in Game 4 of the NLDS. And one game that went to 11, it was bases loaded. Orion Kerkering comes out of the bullpen for the Phillies. And it was one of those situations where the panic sets in. Andy Páez, a little grounder right to the mound, and Kerkering got a little nervous, could have threw it to first, got out of the inning and lived to see another inning. But he ended up throwing to home, and there was a whole thing, erratic throw to home, and the Dodgers walk it off and move on to the championship series. Tell me a little bit about the psyche of a guy like Orion Kerkering in that moment in such a high leverage spot, and also what's going through his head when that ball gets, you know, dribbled into the mound.
Yeah, I think you're really trying to slow these things down. I'm sure you can only imagine how loud and tense the moment was in Dodger Stadium, but it didn't look like the ball was hit in a way that it almost seemed like he got a changeup back at him. And so it wasn't a clean field, obviously knocked it down. And in that moment, you kind of just lose sight of the fact that maybe I can pick it up and go to first base. It's just such a heartbreaking way for a series to end on a play like that. I mean, we, you know, PFP goes on in the middle of, from the start of spring training all the way through. You do every day. It's almost mind-numbing that you do it as many times as you do. And this is another PFP type of situation, and I'm sure that he wanted to at least make a good throw to home plate to give himself an opportunity. Might have been an easier throw just to go to first. Who knows? But, before we got on the air, we were talking a little bit about did the runner touch home plate? I mean, in this whole mass of confusion and run around, it looked like the runner coming from third didn't touch the plate, and that got missed in the heat of the exchange and just the way, you know, the game came to a finish. It was kind of crazy.
And Trevor, I want to ask you about that game specifically since it's hot on our minds. One thing I was curious about, this is a different situation that is more prevalent nowadays than it was, you know, back 20 years ago. Johan Duran, the closer for the Phillies, came in the seventh inning. And he came in with two men on, and he was going against Ohtani with two outs, and they ended up walking Ohtani to load the bases. And they were up 1-0 in that spot. He ended up putting himself in a really high-leverage situation, and they ended up walking Betts to give him the tying run. Got out of it after that. But one people were talking about with Rod Thompson was, do you walk Ohtani in that spot? Tell me a little bit about, number one, as a closer, if you ever had to come in early, and if you're in Duran's spot, is it even in your interest to walk somebody like Ohtani who was cold just to face Betts? Tell me about that part of the game a little bit if you got a thought on it.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, something that I'm sure they talked about. I'm sure he was aware that, you know, we might code you a little bit earlier that, you know, the season's on the line. You're going to have all hands on deck. He's my one weapon I can use when I want to. Rob felt like that was the moment in the game, excuse me, that he didn't want to get away from him. And I think it's always tough to come in and walk a guy and almost position yourself where you don't have maneuverability. Like, let's see how the at-bat maybe goes. You know, but Ohtani's, you know, a feared guy, you know, one of the best hitters in the game right now. And, you know, being able to move him just to first base and start moving down the line a little bit in the lineup is a good thing. They're just loaded. They got guys, you know, up and down that lineup that can hurt you. And Mookie, in a sense, no different. So I thought it was an interesting move. It's something that you have to prepare for. I know that they did. They got their guy on the mound they wanted to. They just wanted to get the matchup righty on righty, I'm sure. And, you know, at least they walked away with a tie game in the eighth.
Trevor Hoffman with us. Trevor, last thing here. I'm curious. You played in a fascinating era of offense, especially with the steroid era. And you're talking about you see a guy like Ohtani at the plate, and you almost have to change everything you do. You saw a lot of hitters like that, and especially playing for San Diego throughout that era. Basically, every game you were going against an all-time great bat, and whether they were on steroids or not, they were still great hitters throughout that era. It was an offensive powerhouse of an era. Tell me a little bit about some of the great hitters that you've dealt with, and some of the guy, and sort of the tacticianness that went into attacking these hitters, especially with the amount of power that they had in the era you played.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I'm glad I didn't have the strike zone that I had to throw it through that guys have to now. It's, you know, the Quest Tech that was coming into play, and now we're talking about the ABS system. You know, the hitters were great, as you mentioned, and so they're almost great in every era. You can find guys that have the ability to hit, and so you had to navigate, again, lineups based off of where you were at, and the scoreboard was telling you when you might have had to, you know, get after it a little bit more in certain situations. But, man, it was awesome to compete and go up against some of the best in the game. And I always loved that challenge. And, you know, it's no different today. You know, you got a chance to see, you know, Aaron Judge pull his hands through and keep a ball fair. There aren't many people that can hit balls right down the line that hard and not get it to turn. And so, you know, it's amazing to see guys be able to perfect their craft even today.
Is there a fearsome batter that really, you know, kept you up the night before you were going against their team thinking, all right, if I go against him, I got to be on my game. Who was that batter to you?
Yeah, there's quite a few in the NOS, obviously Barry up in San Francisco, right. But it was Todd Helton that ultimately was, his numbers were like little league numbers. I mean, I couldn't figure out a way to get this guy out. I probably should have just, you know, pulled a Garrett Cole and put four fingers up and get him to go to first base or something. But, you know, it's just a little bit different mindset. You always feel like you can get him out the next time, and unfortunately, his numbers were pretty good against me.
Yeah, how about that? Todd Helton was the guy that you know, kept you up and always hit you well. There's always that one matchup. That's fascinating. Well, Trevor, I appreciate you giving us the time. I appreciate you giving us a little bit of a background in your career and what's going on today, and of course, the perfect game event going up in Jupiter. Looking forward to talking again soon. It was an honor to have a chance to chat. Looking forward to the next one. All right.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate you.
Got it. Trevor Hoffman, the MLB Hall of Famer, joining us on ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Big thanks to the Hall of Famer, Trevor Hoffman, just joining us. The San Diego Padre, great. The second all-time in Major League Baseball history in saves with 601. Appreciate him giving us the time. If you missed any of that, you missed any of the previous part of the show, go listen to Russo and Rizzo on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, all those great places. Just go to Russo and Rizzo. Go to the ESPN South Florida app, and you can listen to us in full weekly. We have ESPN West Palm High School Game Day coming up after this. You get the Martin Bowl between Martin County and South Fork. That is going to be tonight with Christian Catton, the call. So you got that to look forward to. Mr. Free or The Freeze with Racetrack, the guy who races people around the Atlanta Braves warning track. You've seen the videos. He will be at the Martin Bowl tonight looking to race. So stay tuned for that. It is going to be at the event tonight. Let's make a couple picks with the packed weekend of sports. Let's blitz the book with Hard Rock Bet.
Send some heat. Pin your ears back. It's time to blitz the book. Presented by Hard Rock Bet.
Blitz the book presented by Hard Rock Bet on ESPN 106.3. All right, I made four picks today in a parlay style, but I've made two MLB to wins in the game fives, and you're on the opposite side of either side. I took the Brewers and the Mariners. You like the Tigers and the Cubs.
Yeah, we're completely
fucked. We're going to put together a parlay and exclude those. All right, does that work?
It does. Now, one game I need on the parlay. I like Ohio State minus 14.5 tomorrow. I think they cover that not with ease. I think the first half is close, but I think second half they'll be able to pull away in that one.
So you want to take Ohio State minus 14.5 yep. at Illinois on the road.
And then I also want a road favorite in Alabama.
You want to take Alabama?
Yeah. So those are my picks. Alabama 3.5, Ohio State 14.5. Ohio State's been a cover machine all year, and so is Alabama, excluding one game in the Florida State game. So if you put those two together, we're already at plus 274, Kyle. So
all right, I got a couple more. I like BYU at Arizona. BYU with Hank Bachmeyer's brother, who is a true freshman who has played as good as any true freshman in the entire country at quarterback. BYU's always got a pretty stable program. I like the minus 1.5 at Arizona on the road. And lastly, I know Mike's going to be all over this too. I like USC to beat Michigan.
Yeah,
and I like them to cover as well. Minus 2.5. You want to talk about teams that need a big win? You can make the argument Michigan needs a big win, but they didn't play that well against Wisconsin last week. Number two, USC is coming off a bad loss against Illinois. So they had that terrible loss where they were in the game at the end, and now they could get a home game against Michigan, true freshman quarterback. I like USC on that front there.
That's $20 to win $275 plus 1263 odds. Plus 1263 odds with our good friends at Hard Rock Bet. Download the app today.
We're taking four favorites, but I'm fine with it because
it's a week
of the favorites. And you got a couple ranked matchups on top of that. So I have no issue taking the ranked games there. We got Ohio State minus 14.5. Alabama to beat Missouri on the road, minus 3.5. That's two road favorites there. And then you got BYU, three road favorites, minus 1.5.
So we're all on the...
Anyway, but USC's at home.
There you go.
And then we're taking USC in their building. Fight on. Fight on, the Trojans. So we'll see what happens there. That's our college football Blitz the Book parlay that we have with a Hard Rock Bet. Go down that app today and go listen to Russo and Rizzo on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Catch us on YouTube at ESPN West Palm, Twitter, and Facebook. And stick around for ESPN West Palm High School Game Day, which is coming up directly after this for some Martin Bowl action. Colin Russo, myself, and Damien Prez will be with you for pregame, halftime, and postgame. And you get Christian Catt on the call. You can watch it on ESPN Top 63, or you can watch us as well, ESPN West Palm. Stay tuned to Mike and Damien tomorrow with some Inter-Miami action and some Saturday tailgate. Stay tuned for Sunday Huddle at 10 a.m. on Sunday with myself and Cabe Chumsen. And we'll see you on Monday with a lot of baseball to react to. Stay tuned for it. Russo and Rizzo and ESPN 106.3.